Z ballot breakdown.
Ballot breakdown.
Broomhead breaks down who and what are on your ballot. AZ ballot breakdown.
All right, let's get into a little bit of this. We do it every day at this time. We're going to talk about the Trump trial in a moment. Legendary day, kind of a historic day, not necessarily in a good way, as a former president stands trial for criminal offenses. Opening statements happened. Donald Trump talks about the arguments here. Listen to this lawyer, the legal expenses. Listen to the former president here.
You pay a lawyer. He's a lawyer. And they call it a legal expense. That's the exact term they used, legal expense, in the books. And another thing that wasn't even said was we never even deducted it as a tax deduction. So that takes a whole vast area. Most people want to deduct everything. We never even took it as a tax deduction. But they call the payment to a lawyer a legal expense in the books.
So we're going to talk about this from an election standpoint. This is our ballot breakdown segment as we sprint toward November in a presidential election and all of the other important elections that are on the ballot. Arizona, just let me give you a little sidebar for a moment. We've got a Senate race that is going to, could be the key to the balance of power in the United States Senate. That's our Senate race. Then if you look at our state legislature, there is a one seat majority for the Republicans in the House and the Senate in our state legislature. And we have a Democrat governor who is not up for re-election. So if one or both chambers were to flip, we could see a completely different Arizona, at least for the next 2 years. I'm not calling it good or bad. You know where I stand politically in my political views. But you have to admit the balance of power and the direction of Arizona politically could dramatically change after November. Well, there's no doubt in that. But how about this for the presidential election? With all of the fanfare, with everything that's going on, we've got the war that's going on in the Middle East right now, that the war officially is between Hamas and Israel in Gaza. But we also know with the attacks from the Iranians and a counterattack from the Israelis and the talk of further involvement and Hezbollah to the north in Lebanon and their bombing into Israel, people are concerned about an uprising and all-out war in the Middle East, what that could do to fuel prices because of that oil-rich area. We know that there's more funding from the U.S. going to Ukraine as Ukraine moves into a couple of years of war with Russia. We also know that Taiwan and the tension with China. We've got foreign policy that's huge, the border issue. Over 8 million people in the last few years crossing into the U.S. We've got the economic issues as it continues to see stubborn inflation. And with all of that going on, what does it look like we're fighting about? It looks like the argument is still going to be about the personality contest between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. You look at this, and here is a poll. NBC News' latest national poll shows the Biden numbers inching up as Robert F. Kennedy's inflation and abortion all scramble the 2024 contest. But here's the interesting thing about this. The election interest hits a new low in a tight race. You've got this battle that keeps getting closer, yet interest continues to decline. So are we going to see the Trump loyalists versus the Biden loyalists, and other people just seem disinterested? This is a warning, I think, to both major political parties, to the Republicans and the Democrats, that the world is changing. When I was very young, there were three news stations. There were three networks. That was it. ABC, NBC, CBS. That was it. You had three channels to choose from. You had local things you could watch sometimes, but that was it. You had three choices. You had three sources for news. Radio was still, and is still, we are still a way to reach people locally. But it was, back then, the only choice when you were in your car. We had all of this. You had a captive audience. Well, the world's changed and people's opinions are so much more diverse because the way they access information is so much more diverse. And people are looking at this, and many people have said from the beginning of this happening, before it was set in stone that it was Donald Trump as the nominee, when there were a lot of questions of whether or not Joe Biden was going to continue to run for the presidency or if he was going to back out and somebody else was going to be the Democratic nominee, the country kept saying if they had their choices, neither was the one they preferred. They didn't want either of these two candidates to continue running. Now, each of them has loyalists. There are people out there that believe Donald Trump is the worst president that's ever lived. And there are others that believe he's the greatest president we've ever had. Those people are not going away, and they are going to vote accordingly. But when you look at the share of voters that say they have a high interest in the 2024 election has hit nearly a 20-year low at this point in the presidential race. Only 64%. 64% say they have an interest. You go back to 24 years ago, that was 77%. 13% less people are even interested in this. 2012, it was 67%. 2008, it was 74%. People aren't interested. I think people are tiring of what's happened. I think people are tiring of the constant lawsuits and court cases and laptops, and the issues is what they want to talk about. They want to hear and they want to decide who is best equipped to run the country, who is best equipped to hold that office. According to one poll here, it says this story was just written 2 days ago. Immigration won't decide the election. Polls have not captured what will. This may come as a surprise, but the top issue is housing. More explicitly, it's shelter costs. So when you look at what voters, this Axios poll of voters between 18 to 34 year old nationwide, 39% say it's the economy, and it's not even close. Abortion is at 16%, climate change is at 10, guns is at 7, student debt is at 11, immigration is at 11, and other is at 7. It's not even close that many people believe the economy is what's happening. Battleground poll averages in swing states. In Wisconsin, it's Trump up 2.8. In Arizona, Trump is only up 1, I believe it is. Let me make sure I'm on the right line. Yep, 4.5 in Georgia. He is up 3.3 in Michigan. And he is down by half a point to Biden in Pennsylvania. Trump is up by 4.2 in North Carolina and 3.2 in Nevada. So these are where the numbers are. So there's a couple of things when you talk about the president's trial, the former president's trial, and that is, in spite of his legal problems, if President Biden had the support of the American people on just about any level, this would be a walkover for Joe Biden. And it should be a walkover for Joe Biden. If the American people had a huge concern about Donald Trump's trial in New York or the election stuff in Georgia or any of his other legal problems, if they believed that these were viable, and I'm not picking a side, I'm just being an observer. You've got a former president of the United States in a criminal trial today, and polling shows him, even within the margin of error, winning or in a dead heat with the current president. And we all know the incumbent president always has the inside track to winning re-election. If you think about the presidents in my lifetime, the presidents that didn't win re-election, Jimmy Carter, George H.W. Bush, and Donald Trump. That's three in my lifetime, and I'm 57 years old. Every other president, Reagan had two terms. Bush, 41 or 43 had two terms. Bill Clinton had two terms. Barack Obama had two terms. Now, one of these two is going to have a second term. But the American people are looking at this and saying, we're not interested. How do the two major political parties respond? Do you stay closed in your rooms? Do you stay in your locked offices where everybody agrees and anybody that doesn't agree gets kicked off the island like Survivor? Or do you start looking out and realizing there is a huge segment of the U.S. population that is untapped because you refuse to move at all in the way you deliver your message? This screams to that. Coming up in just a moment, the Phoenix Police Department has arrested three women in a $500,000 retail theft case. We'll talk about organized retail theft, and we're going to talk about crime in general coming up here in just a moment.
strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, the Phoenix Police Department arrests three women in a $500,000 retail theft case. This is why we talk about organized retail theft. It's very difficult to pay the bills to keep the lights on. If you own the building, your mortgage, if you don't own the building and your rent, whatever it is, to pay for the power and everything else you need to run a retail location with everybody else buying things online. There are still people that love to go. You go to Target, you go to these different stores. There are some stores that doesn't make much sense to buy stuff online, but people like to shop. So they go to these places. But what it takes when you've got organized retail theft, Phoenix police and the Maricopa County Attorney's Office announced three women arrested for over $500,000 in a retail. Alejandra Torres, Jennifer Zazueta Reyes, and Guadalupe Gomez Moreno face several charges of selling and, in some case, orchestrating the theft of thousands of cosmetics across several stores, including Target, Sephora, and Ulta. I'm just reading from the story. One of the women says she didn't know that the items were stolen. They said that one of the women, Torres, had not been employed at the time of her arrest. They claimed in court records that bank statements showed that this woman yielded more than $1 million in incoming funds and credits to her bank account since January of 2018. The reason why I talk about this is the county attorney quote says, just riding over here, I was hearing of another case involving about $300,000 worth of theft. She explained that the special task force was organized in 2022 to address the problem. That if we don't keep a lid on this, if we aren't fighting these things, this is why we talk about having a police force that can be proactive. This is why when we talk about law enforcement needed to be fully staffed, fully equipped, fully funded, is if you don't have, and it's equally as important in the county attorney's office or any prosecutor's office, if you don't have a fully funded, fully staffed office, you have to sacrifice. In policing, what ends up happening is you take proactive cops, whether they're in an investigative division one of the things that happened years ago when I first moved here in the mid 90s, auto theft was so big in Phoenix. I believe the city of Phoenix was number one, but it was certainly in the top three in auto theft nationally. Now, some of it had to do with some of the border issues at the time, and there were some laws that were changed that helped in that effect. But Phoenix was number one, or at least in the top three in the nation in auto theft. Within a few years, they weren't even in the top 50 anymore. There were legislative changes that were made. There were prosecutorial changes that were made and more aggressive prosecutions. But there also was the formation and the expansion of the auto theft department, the Phoenix Auto Theft Division, where they focused on these, not just kids joyriding in somebody else's car. It was going after the organized auto theft rings that were stealing vehicles, taking them into Mexico, chopping them up in Phoenix and selling parts internationally was a huge issue in Arizona. And so with the proactive policing, they were able to keep a lid on it. They were able to rein it in. Same thing is happening here. If the city of Phoenix and every other agency around the valley, I keep saying Phoenix, I talk about them specifically, this story is written about Phoenix, but every city within the sound of my voice, if the law enforcement agencies are not active with the retail theft, the organized retail theft, with this crime tourism, with people burglarizing upscale homes, especially ones that have back up to golf courses and back up to washes, that if without them being proactive, you are going to see more and more and more of this. Criminals get the hint. They are smart. And with millions of dollars in this at stake, they also become, I say, better organized, but they understand we are going to go where it's easiest. We are going to go just like every other person does in the world. I want to say criminals, but we all do this. We go where it's easiest. Convenience. We understand we've got a better chance of getting away with it here. We're probably not going to be caught here. Even if we do, it's a slap on the wrist. One of the people arrested here in Arizona in the crime tourism of burglarizing people's homes was a minor under the age of 18, had been released on his own recognizance, no bail, released from custody in California. And then when he was kept in custody in Arizona, was absolutely shocked that he was going to have to spend that time in jail. Why? Because we put a high bond. It was asked for, it was requested and given. That three legs of the stool are working in this instance. We need to be doing more to foster a stronger and bigger police department in all the cities we live in, including the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. And we need to make sure that the county attorney's office has all the funding they need to staff their offices fully to make sure if a crime is committed against you and it happens to be one crime, they break into your car, they damage your car, they steal hundreds of dollars worth of stuff, that you know you're going to get the same level of prosecution is someone that breaks in or that goes these organized retail theft, where criminals understand here in Maricopa County, not only are we going to arrest you, not only are we going to put you on trial and convict you, but our judges are going to put you away for a while. So you're probably better off doing this somewhere else. I just think it sends a better message. In a little bit, but 10:35, public school enrollment falls nationally. I've got some stories that tell me why that's happening, but what can we do here in Arizona to reverse that trend? We'll discuss it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Head out on the highway. All right, so let's talk about public school enrollment. I mentioned this earlier, but let me give you some numbers. The share of children 5 to 17 years old enrolled in public schools fell by almost 4 percentage points from 2012 to 2022 in 10 years. 87% of children were enrolled in public school in 2022. 90.7% were enrolled in 2012. In Kentucky, the share of school-aged children in public school decreased by almost 8 percentage points. In South Carolina, 7.4%. In Alaska, nearly 7%. We are also seeing a decrease in places like here in Arizona. During the same period, the share of 5 to 17-year-olds enrolled in private schools increased by 2 percentage points. Charter schools saw a similar increase, according to the National Alliance of Public Charter Schools. Educators and researchers say the swing has been caused in part by laws that have targeted public schools while propping up alternatives. But I would also say the alternatives are because public schools are not giving families what they want. Now, I will tell you, I make room, and you can talk to, it's not like you're going to go out and do a survey, but I pride myself in making lots of room for other people's opinions. Having a very strong opinion of your own that you can defend is important to me, but also understanding that it's not going to change somebody else's mind. That when it comes to public opinion and your opinion on something, you're entitled to it and you should be able to defend it. Don't say, my friend says this, so I say that. My friend told me this. Why do you believe it? I will say to you that I agree with certain things and disagree with others, but those choices should be there for parents. I will tell you, I'm not a fan of critical race theory in schools. I don't think social emotional learning, as well as it is intended, is doing what it's supposed to do. I don't believe that they are advantages to schools. I believe that when I was in school, based on the education I got in elementary education, I believe I had a better basic education than children are receiving today. And I think it proves itself out with the number of people that can read. Here I do a job where I read for a living. I have to be able to read something very quickly, form an opinion, and give that opinion in a cohesive way, or you don't listen to the show. I barely have a high school diploma, and I graduated in 1985. But I had a stellar basic education. When I was in elementary school, I was a really good reader. I read at an early age. I was a very good reader. I was able to, my reading comprehension was off the charts because that was the focus. Hooked on phonics. You learn to read, you learn to spell, you learn to construct a sentence, you learn to comprehend what you read, and then you're able to regurgitate your opinion based on what you've read. That's not been the case for a lot of people. But I also will say to you that there are many people that I respect that have the opposite view, that they believe in this day and age with everything else with kids, we need new things and there should be new ways. And so we should do these other things. Okay, then make the options available. I mean, that's the key to success, right? Is options. We got rid of the monopoly of the phone company. Why? Because you knew customer service was going to go up. They'd have to fight for your business from a customer service and from an expense perspective. We'd make sure that happens. We have major grocery store chains that want to merge, and people are fighting against it because they believe it's going to take away the competition part of it. It's going to push down, whether you agree with it or not, the sentiment is it's going to push down the desire for them to be better in customer service because they own everything. They can price fix easier. And yet here we have a public school system that refuses to change. I've got stories in front of me about here in Arizona and in the Phoenix area, but across the state of Arizona, schools are inundated with threats of weapons and guns and violence on campus. And yet, over the last couple of years, the Phoenix Union High School District has flat out refused to allow school resource officers on their campuses. There was one member of the school board that said publicly at a meeting, dropping the F-bomb, there's no effing way that there'll be cops on our campuses. They went with private security guards. So you do the math on that. Parents are not going to fight forever. They're going to make their voices heard. If they feel like they're not being listened to, they're going to go somewhere else. And that's what they're doing. The public school system should be flourishing. It is still the biggest choice for people. But if you want to gain back what they call it what you want, but the market share, if you want more butts in seats, you're going to have to offer the parents what they want. And if you've got a school district and you have a school that says, here's what we teach. We believe critical race theory is fair and honest in a way to teach history. We believe that social emotional learning is the way to assess and to address your children and their needs emotionally and the way they behave. And we're going to do that in our school. You are going to have parents from all over that agree with you, want to send their kids to your school. Conversely, if you're a traditional school that says, we are going to go back to hooked on phonics, we're going to make sure that by the time your child is in third grade, they can read at a third grade level. In eighth grade, they're going to be performing math skills. They're going to be prepared for the rest of their lives to learn. We are going to focus on the basics of academics. We're going to stay away from the political views of things, and they're going to get that kind of an education. People are going to flood to your school as well. But the days that school districts are doing what they're doing now, which is sit down and shut up. We're the professional educators. You wouldn't tell a doctor on how to treat your child. Don't tell us how to treat your child. Those days are numbered. The American Federation of Teachers, the NEA, the National Educators Association, the big teachers union still have a stranglehold in parts of the country. They don't have a stranglehold here. The teacher organizations here at one time during the Red for Ed movement had 77,000 people plus marching on the state capitol for teacher raises. And there's a lot of politics there I'm not going to get into, but they had the support of so many people in our community that said teachers deserve a raise. They can't get even 15 people at a protest now because they are overtly political. They said very publicly when they first came out, they said they're not a political movement. And it was very clear from the beginning they were. There at the time, what they wanted was to unseat the current governor. At the time, it was Doug Ducey, and get the David Garcia elected governor. They said it. They eventually just moved completely away the fact from the fact that they weren't political. But people don't care. Even if you're somebody that leans left politically, you don't want politics in school. You want your kids to be safe and you want them to learn. That's all people care about with their children in schools. That's it. And we have seen too much of the political movements on school boards. There is too little of their listening to parents and what the parents want. And the parents now have the opportunity to take their child and the tax dollars and go elsewhere. And when the school districts, and I hope they do it sooner rather than later, begin to understand that and that they've got a customer base in the parents that hold the purse strings and they're the parents of the children, the better the public schools are going to be. And until then, you're going to see a decline across the country when there are options for parents. There's a reason why they're going. You can't blame the parents. You have to blame the schools. And I hope they straighten it out. I want to see a flourishing public school system. We just don't have it right now. In a moment, we're going to go back to the border. Here's a quote from a college student. I'm undocumented and in college. My story is more common than you think. It's the future. We'll get to that coming up in just a moment.
values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, listen, we are going all in for the Suns playoffs, and you have a chance to win tickets here with KTAR News in the 7 a.m. hour on Arizona's Morning News. Coming up, and you want to be sticking around in the 11 o'clock hour, and I'm not going to tell you exactly when we're doing it, but in the 11 o'clock hour, I'm going to give you a code word. You're going to text that code word to 411-923 for a shot at winning Suns playoff tickets. If you don't do that, if you don't win today at 11 o'clock, or if you're not in at 11, 3 and 5 p.m., we'll do it again. All week long, we're doing it. Don't miss your chance to tune in during those hours and win tickets. Be here, because coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, I'm going to give you a code word and your chance to win Suns tickets. All right, so the headline is, I'm undocumented and in college, my story is more common than you think, and it is the future. And I believe that to be true. The issue is, there is now a battle in the U.S. The view of immigration is changing in the U.S., and it's unfortunate. I am such an advocate for legal immigration. I think that it is the lifeblood of our country. I have so many friends that are not just success stories of the American dream, but they're what every one of us should be proud of, what America truly is known for around the world and what we are. Opening our arms to people. I still believe in the great Colossus. I still believe in that poem at the foot of the Statue of Liberty, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. I still believe in all of that. I don't believe that that's a somber poem. I believe that if you read that poem, you should read it with your fist in the air. Because it's true that we have forged this great nation because of that. But here's the problem. There is an order to this that should be held, that you should not be able to come here illegally, and nobody should be rewarded for bad behavior. We can use all the anecdotal things, and I've been using this, and we've talked quite a bit about it, and we're going to do it again in the 11 o'clock hour about camping laws and homelessness. But there's this thing about squatters, and legislatures across this country are trying to solidify their laws to protect landlords, because there's always been a battle. If you're a renter, if you are someone that's renting space, whether it's a commercial space or it's the place you live, as a tenant, you should have your rights protected. You shouldn't have to live or rent from an abusive landlord. Just because their name is on the title of the property doesn't mean they should be able to abuse you, and they should abuse the rights. You have the keys to that castle. That landlord cannot just demand entry without notice. They can't come into your property. They can't jack your rent. They can't kick you out for no reason. All of these things are necessary to protect the tenants. But when tenants, or when people begin to see loopholes in those laws, and they're not paying for properties and they're squatting in properties they're not entitled to, state legislatures immediately see that and say, you know what? We're this is not what these laws are for. We're going to protect the landlords. Well, here in the U.S., we want you to come. We are encouraging people to come and be productive members of our society. If you want to come here and work and help the U.S. economy and your skill set is needed, we welcome you. Pay taxes, obey our laws, and come and go as you need to with a visa and work in our economy. That's my personal belief. If you want to become an American, go through the process. Get the visa, get the green card, go through the process, take the test, do the background check, become an American citizen. I will embrace you as a citizen. I will cheer for you when you vote the first time. The problem is the people that abuse our rules, nobody's running to fix the legislation. Nobody is running. Yes, I believe the president needs to change his policies. The legislative branch, the Congress, needs to change the laws. What you see in the headline I read to you, it's, I'm undocumented, I'm in college, my story is more common than you think, it's the future. It shouldn't be. By the time a child reaches college age, if they came to this country without citizenship or without permission, they should have had their case figured out long before this happened. If as a child, their parents weren't entitled to bring them here, then the entire family should be sent back across the border and told to do it the right way. You're welcome to come here the right way. I don't care if we're using the analogy of skipping the line in an amusement park. It doesn't matter. you've got to do it the right way. And we have a responsibility to make laws that allow people to come here the right way, that it should not take a decade and it should not take thousands and thousands of dollars, that we should be able to make sure good people are having access to this country. I believe that to be true. But even with that being said, none of it matters if we don't have border security. And migrants aren't doing themselves any favors right now. There's a story out of New York that there was a high school soccer game that had to be canceled because migrants refused to leave the field. So the game had to be canceled. We hear about migrants making demands. People are upset. They're being given money and food. So they're spending thousands of dollars to come here because the cartels don't tolerate you not paying them. So you owe them the money. And many times you then owe them your life because you're going to be enslaved to them until you pay them back. But then you come here and you're destitute and you take free food and free shelter and free clothing. And then for that, you make even more and more demands. That's not every migrant, but that's what we're seeing more and more of. And it is damaging people's opinions of immigration in this country. And it needs to stop. But it starts with leadership that has a common sense approach that says we are going to make sure good people can come here in an orderly way. But if you've come here illegally, if we deem your immigration status or your asylum claim to be false, you are going back across the border. Know that now. You may be here 5, 6, 8 years, whatever it is. If your asylum claim is deemed that it was not correct or was not eligible, you are going back. So be prepared for that or go back and do it the right way. Just after 11 o'clock, we are going to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court taking up the idea of public camping. Should you be allowed to camp in public? Is it a right? Or do we need to end homelessness by ending the public camping? We'll discuss it next.